King Solomon was one of the most respected men in history. His wealth and wisdom were unparalleled. Tragically, the king squandered his success, not in a single act of willfulness, but with incremental lapses in judgment. Today, on Insightful Living, Chuck Swindoll continues his biographical study of Solomon. In his message, we'll witness the king's moral blunders. All of them were fueled by a toxic combination of opulence and boredom. Solomon's journey is a lesson for anyone who's tempted to compromise their values. Chuck called today's message, Signs of Erosion.
Like most of you in high school days, I took a course in chemistry. And like most of you, I didn't learn a lot from the course that I took in chemistry, except one invaluable lesson that had very little to do with chemistry. Our teacher's name was Mr. Williams, and he knew a great deal about the course, but he didn't know much about teaching it to high schoolers. So we sort of listened as he reviewed a lot of things that were of interest to himself, till one day he decided to do an experiment that would help attract the attention of busy and preoccupied high school students. The experiment that he carried out lives on in my mind to this day. We watched the killing of a frog in an oversized beaker as that beaker was placed in tap water. Water was placed in that beaker and the frog was put inside the beaker with no top on it. And the beaker was set over a Bunsen burner. And this Bunsen burner was on a very, very low flame, and it continued on for a period of about 2.5 or 3 hours. The water was heated at about 0.017 degrees Fahrenheit per second. Very, very, very slight. And as time passed, the water, of course, became warmer, warmer, and warmer. And that frog, as we came back from class to check on it, that frog never gave a complaining kick and, of course, never jumped out of that water as it literally boiled to death in a period of about 3 hours. The thing that lives on in my mind is not the frog in the beaker, but the principle of deterioration. The point, I think, is clear. Little by little, particle by particle, grain of sand by grain of sand, deterioration can happen in a life. Something that is relatively insignificant can begin to be tolerated with very little thought being given to it as far as its significance is concerned, because that thing in itself is not really that significant. But little by little, degree by degree, hour by hour, day by day, death can be in the process of occurring, and we don't even realize it. I am convinced that some this very evening in this place of worship are in the beaker. You don't know it. You don't sense it because there's nothing that profound happening. That is in the area of your disobedience. But as time passes and as that thing is tolerated, leading only to something a little bit warmer and a little bit warmer until it becomes slightly hot, ultimately taking its final toll on your life. F.B. Meyer, the very fine British writer, said, "No man suddenly becomes base." Very few things suddenly happen with regard to deterioration. No church suddenly splits. No child suddenly becomes a delinquent. No relationship suddenly ends. No marriage suddenly dissolves. No building suddenly collapses. No tree suddenly falls. It's been a process of time. Degree by degree, grain of sand by grain of sand, compromise by compromise. The classic illustration in all the Bible of erosion is Solomon. I want to be fair with Solomon, but I want to be honest with his life as well. And to help do both of those things, I want you to turn to start with in 2 Chronicles chapter 1, verse 1. I want you to see to start with what a flawless image this very capable man had. Solomon the king, the son of David, Israel's most peaceable ruler, and without question, richest and wisest. To begin with, I want you to see in verse 1 the blessing of God that was on his life, 2 Chronicles 1. Solomon, the son of David, established himself securely over his kingdom, and the Lord, his God, was with him. Not only that, the Lord, his God, exalted him greatly. Keep looking at the verse. The word exalted is from a Hebrew term that means to ascend, to grow, to go up, to climb. It is the idea of above and beyond or exceedingly. The Lord God was with him and exceedingly greatly caused him to ascend. That's the idea. Painfully literal, though it is. It's like the New Testament verse, exceedingly abundantly above. That's the idea. And to show how true this was, verse 7 tells us that God appeared to this man and said to him, "Ask what I shall give you." Now, that's the kind of man, that's the kind of walk he had with God. Ask. And you remember the story of what Solomon asked for, simply asked for wisdom, verse 10, asked for knowledge. In verse 11, God does over and above because you had this in mind and you didn't ask for riches, wealth, or honor, or the life of those who hate you, implied I would have given any of that to you. Nor have you even asked for long life, but you've asked for wisdom and knowledge. Verse 12, wisdom and knowledge you have been granted to you. And on top of that, he gave him riches and wealth and honor. Now note this, such as none of the kings who were before you has possessed, nor those who will come after you. I'll tell you, that is a max kind of blessing. God gave him an open-ended series of blessings. He was a blessed man from the hand of God, like none other before or after. In 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 13, there is a sort of parallel comment that doesn't appear in the Chronicle passage. 1 Kings 3:13. Just one other thought on the blessing of God. I have also given you what you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that there will not be any among the kings like you all your days. Not only, Solomon, has there never been one like you before, nor will there be one like you after. During your days, I'll put a bracket around your life and I'll lift you up so that all of your peers, all of the kings from all of the countries around, will see what a man you are. The blessing of God. Chapter 4 of 1 Kings turns our attention to the variety of interests in Solomon's life. I want you to see from where he fell so that you won't think he was sort of a loser to start with. He was not. 4:29, God gave Solomon wisdom and very great discernment and breadth of mind like the sand that is on the seashore. His wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the others. We've looked at this passage. Verse 32, he spoke 3,000 proverbs and his songs were 1,005. He spoke of varied interests, trees, animals, birds, creeping things, and fish. And men came from all peoples to hear the wisdom of Solomon, from all the kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom. Unparalleled, incomparable man. The blessing of God caused him to have a variety of interests that apparently were never exhausted. And he pursued each one without restraint. They were all his. And he made a record of achievements. Chapter 6, verse 1. He built that unsurpassed temple the 480th year after the sons of Israel came out of the land of Egypt. In the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, he began to build the house of the Lord. It gives us the date of it. And the last verse of chapter 6 tells us when he finished. He was 7 years in building it. If you check the months, it would be about 7.5 years. So for 7.5 years, the beginning of his reign, he built the temple. Look at the next verse, 7, verse 1. Solomon was building his own house 13 years, and he finished all his house. So for 20 years of his 40-year reign, he was building the temple, and he was building his own residence. Now, don't lay a lot of emphasis in the time he spent on his own house, as compared to the temple. It's a little bit of a naive interpretation to say he therefore was selfish because he built his own place 13 years in God's. Remember, David put a lot of things in the storehouse for the temple before David died. So to build the temple simply meant he had to draw the requisition from the house that David had laid up, all those good things. A lot of the stones were quarried, a lot of the resources were there, and he just put them all together. But he built his own house. So what I want to say is that for 20 and a half years, the man was involved in building projects like no one else around. Remember from Ecclesiastes, he built pools, and those pools are still in existence. He built landscapes. He built temples. He built houses in the wilderness. He built resort places for himself. And for the people of Israel, it was a whole urban renewal. For 20 years, he was involved in this architectural dream of his and just sort of ran every rabbit trail he desired, finding accomplishment in every one of them. It was like nobody else had ever seen. Incredible. The blessing of God, a variety of interests, just a record of achievements. Someone has listed his annual income as somewhere between $60 and $75 million. Plenty of money. Gold became his favorite of all the gems and precious elements. Silver was just as common as paper today in the days of Solomon. Incredible wealth. One more thought. He had the praise of men. See chapter 10, verse 1. The queen of Sheba heard about the fame of Solomon. The fame of Solomon. His splendor began to be a common household conversation. Concerning the name of the Lord, she came to test him with difficult questions. And she did that, and he came through in flying colors. And verse 5. Verse 6, she said to the king, it was a true report which I heard in my own land about your words and your wisdom. I didn't believe the reports until I came and my eyes had seen it, and the half was not told me. You exceed in wisdom and prosperity the report which I heard. Across the page, verse 23, King Solomon became greater than all the kings of the earth in riches and in wisdom. And all the earth, look at the fame, was seeking the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom, which God had put in his heart. All the kings of the earth sought his audience, or an audience with the king, time in his presence. If you could wrap up all the things of this world, they would fall under one of fourth category: fortune, fame, power, and pleasure. And Solomon had them in spades. He had everything. And on top of that, he had the blessing of God, and the Lord seemed to give him without restraint anything he desired. Thomas Carlyle, the Scottish essayist, has said this: adversity is hard on a man, but for one man who can stand prosperity, there are 100 that will stand adversity. You know that you and I will hold up a whole lot better under adversity than we ever will under prosperity. It is a safe statement to make tonight in this service that we who hear the sound of the word do much better when things go poorly than when things go well. in our walk with God. It's too bad, but that's true. Solomon was one of those men whom God could trust with these things in abundance. However, the Bunsen burner under the beaker of his life caused things to get warmer, warmer, and warmer. And he fell into some traps that the flesh laid for him, and he bit in each one of them. I want you to look at Ecclesiastes chapter 2 to see the trap. This is his diary. I want to share with you those three traps, and then briefly in this study, more in depth in the next study, I want us to review those areas of erosion. Ecclesiastes 2. I may be very honest with you and say that this is a very searching kind of study. I don't want to use a scare tactic on you. I just want to warn you from the scriptures with regard to prosperity. And in our affluence and in our blessing from God, I want us to be careful to walk as humbly with Him as though we had nothing. This is a warning that needs to be heeded. The nations themselves live out the application of what we're saying tonight, and it could very well be in some lives this very evening a Solomon-like erosion is happening. I rather believe it is. Now, Ecclesiastes 2 begins to tell us about his diary. I said to myself, come now, I will test you. And he used pleasure as a test. He said, enjoy yourself. He used laughter in verse 2. He used all sorts of interest, verse 3, to stimulate his mind. Verse 4 says he enlarged his works. He got more and more and more and more. Until finally, verse 9, I became great. I increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. That's right. My wisdom stood by me. That's true. And all that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold from my heart any pleasure, for my heart was pleased because of all my labor. This was my reward for all my labor. The first trap is extravagance. Extravagance. Almost a wasteful impropriety in the use of his gifts and the funds that were laid on him. Verse 11, I considered all my activities which my hands had done and the labor which I had exerted. I suggest he's right in the zenith of his career, perhaps 20, 25 years on the throne. And all was emptiness, striving after wind. There was no profit under the sun. In the extravagance of his time and of his money and resources, he began to experience an emptiness. The second trap that he fell into was boredom. Verse 16, there's no lasting remembrance of the wise man as with the fool. Inasmuch as in the coming days all will be forgotten. Look at the boredom that's set in. How the wise man and the fool alike die. So I hated life. That's the boredom of life. I hate it. For the work which had been done under the sun was grievous to me. Because everything is futility and striving after wind. He says in verses 9 to 11, nothing satisfies me anymore. He says in verses 16 through 19, nothing stimulates me anymore. I can't get jazzed about life. I don't think anything great about getting up in the morning, and I see life as a plague as I live it out through the day. This is a man we just saw who had the blessing of God and all of these incredible achievements, a record number of them. Life was empty. Sort of a no more worlds to conquer type of problem. You get behind the athlete out of season who doesn't know Jesus Christ, and he'll tell you about that kind of life. I hear it all the time from those athletes who, after coming to know Christ, admit the boredom of it. When the letters are over and the trophies are over and the crowds have gone and the lights are out, there's nothing left. The entertainers are just like that. When they're off the stage and the mic is off and there's no crowd around to applaud or laugh or whatever at their performing art, there's an emptiness. Unless God is in the center, giving direction and stability, there's a boredom. Like the artist whose name was Ralph Barton, who penned the little note on his pillow just before he took his life, I'm tired of searching for things 24 hours a day to fill up my life. I've gone from country to country, from wife to wife. And he talked about all of his riches, and he says, I'm weary of trying to fill up my life. I am bored to death. The third trap is disillusionment that ultimately happens. Verse 20, therefore I completely despaired of all the fruit of my labor. Verse 20, you see that? I despaired of the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun. 22, what does a man get in all of his labor and in all his striving with which he labors under the sun? Because all his days his task is painful and grievous. At night his mind doesn't rest. This is emptiness. Haven't you had days like that? Sure you have. Thank God they're not more often, they're less often, but they're there. This man lived in the disillusionment of his activities and his achievements. I want you to stop and think tonight about your life. Please. Where are you going? And when you get there, what will satisfy? Why are you pursuing it without God in the center of that pursuit? You're listening to the man or the life of a man who was unexcelled. Unlimited resources, unlimited wisdom, unlimited riches. You will never know that kind of extravagance. And yet, he, in all of those unlimited areas, wound up absolutely empty. Because somehow the central force of his life, the major focus of his life, shifted. Nothing satisfied, nothing stimulated, nothing sizzled in life any longer. It just sort of fell like a deflated balloon. Please listen to this very capable historian who writes of Solomon. Maddened with the love of show, Solomon swung into a feverish career of wastefulness. He literally built himself a paradise of pleasure. One of his chief resorts was Etham, where, when the mornings were beautiful, he often went in stately progress, dressed in snow-white raiment, riding in his chariot of state, which was made of the finest cedar, decked with gold and silver and purple, and carpeted with the costliest tapestry worked by the daughters of Jerusalem. Attended by a bodyguard of 60 valiant men, of the tallest and handsomest of the young men of Israel, arrayed in Tyrian purple, with their long black hair freshly sprinkled with gold dust every day, glittering in the sun. Solomon, like many another monarch, drove too fast and traveled too far. He became debauched and effeminate, an egotist, a cynic, so satiated with the sensual and material affairs of life, he became skeptical of all that was good. To him, everything led to emptiness. Please mull those things over in your mind. In your pursuit, where is your family? Where is the Lord? Where are the values of life? Where is it leading you? Incredible temptations to buy the world's message.
We've set aside tomorrow's edition of Insightful Living to hear Chuck Swindoll's application. There's lots to learn from Solomon's slow demise. Chuck called his message Signs of Erosion. And it's just one of six studies in the biographical series on Solomon. And if you'd like to own a copy of Chuck's biographical series, you can request all six studies on CDs or as downloadable MP3 files. This Hallmark series has been digitally remastered for your enjoyment. So please, place your order today when you go online to insightfulliving.org.uk. To complement this series, our creative team at Insightful Living have fashioned an interactive Bible study workbook for you. We call this resource our Searching the Scriptures Bible Study. This tool is for listeners who want to fully engage in a personal study of Solomon's life and learn the spiritual lessons that his story offers. This Searching the Scriptures Bible Study Workbook for Solomon is available today. To place your order, visit us online at insightforliving.org.uk. You'll be encouraged to hear this comment from one of your fellow listeners. His comment on Instagram said, "Chuck, I've been listening to your program for at least 30 years. I would listen to your radio program and it would always bring me comfort. Eventually, I retired and I became the mayor of my hometown. That probably would never have happened without your encouragement." Well, isn't that great? And when you make a donation to Insightful Living UK, you're impacting listeners just like this one. So, as God prompts you to support this ministry today, make your gift online at insightfulliving.org.uk. I'm Terry Boyle, urging you to join us again when Chuck Swindoll continues to help us spot the signs of moral erosion. Tomorrow on Insightful Living. The preceding message, Signs of Erosion, was copyrighted in 1978, 1980, 1982, 1987, 1995, 2008, and 2024, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2024 by Charles R. Swindoll, Incorporated. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.